guys. Welcome back to Tribe of Unicorns. I'm your host, Kendra Beavis, and today we are talking with Matt Tuttle. Matt is the VP of Content Communications for Robert Irvine, where he is in charge of talent booking, content creation, and design of the Robert Irvine Magazine, which is a digital healthy lifestyle publication featuring stories of uncommon success from people spanning all walks of life. I am so excited to talk to Matt today. He's had quite an extensive career, and as per our usual type of guest, it has not been a straight and narrow path for him, and I'm so excited to get into the details of how he created this incredible career in alignment with his life goals. Let's grab a cup of coffee and let's go. All right. Hey, Matt, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. It's so nice to see your face. You are in Long Island like me.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm very much done with summer. On the last day of August here, I'm always midway through August, I'm done with summer. So I'm looking forward to sweatshirts and football and all that stuff.
Well, I'm so excited to talk to you today. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your journey to where you got to today?
All right. Well, so today I'm VP Content Communications for Chef Robert Irvine from the Food Network. We've done three books together, two cookbooks, and the new book is Business Leadership, Overcoming Impossible. I met him when I was at Muscle and Fitness magazine. I got big into strength and conditioning when I was in college. I never thought that I would be able to marry my major, which was journalism, sports journalism specifically, with that. But funny thing happened was, I remember it was my senior year and they sent us out to cover the Basketball Hall of Fame inductions at the Hall of Fame in Springfield, Massachusetts. And I was so excited, you know, we were gonna interview Moses Malone, Coach K, Bobby Knight, all these people. And there I am, you know, with this dream that I'm going to go back to Long Island. I'm going to be the beat reporter for the New York Mets. That's what I wanted to do. And it took the experience of being in one professional press pool to realize that was not what I wanted to do at all.
Isn't that so funny?
Yeah.
We always think we know which direction and then we get exposed to it and we're like, oh, no.
No, the thing that I had thought forever, because I grew up reading the newspaper, the sports pages, and just thought that watch baseball for a living, come on. And I'm standing there with 50 other people. We all have our recorders out. And I'm like, wait a second. We are all getting access to the same exact material. So we all get to write 50 different, slightly different versions of the same exact thing. Please come on. With all that work, to land a job at a big publication, it's like, congratulations, you get to contribute to the pile of stuff. Mm-hmm. And it just didn't look fun. And then I realized that, you know, when you work in magazines, everything is an exclusive. You're dealing one-on-one with a person who's a lot more willing to open up and talk about real things than they are, you know, in a press pool. I mean, come on. So I started thinking about magazines, and I sent out all my clips when I got out of college to a bunch of different ones, and Muscle and Fitness wrote me back and said, you know, let's put you on an assignment. And then I hit that one out of the park, and they gave me a bunch more. And I went off to write for a daily paper, did do the sports journalism thing up in Vermont for a while. And then when Muscle and Fitness moved to the East Coast, they hired me full time down in New York. And then I was editing Chef Irvine's column in the magazine from day one. And he really liked what I was able to do, which is, you know, they'd send me a spreadsheet with the recipe and I would create a story around it. And he said, okay, we have to do a book like this. So, and then once that came out, I've been with him full time since 2016.
Wow. Oh, wow. So I had thought you guys met at a training session or something. So he was a contributor to the magazine and you were working with him on that way.
It's so funny. It's so funny because at the time that I was up in Vermont working for the paper, I was sending out like basically pitch decks to the different health magazines, and part of the pitch was, even though I had no idea who he, you know, I didn't know him, I just watched his show, which was Dinner Impossible at the time. You know, part of my plan when I was applying to these editor jobs at the magazine was, you bring in Robert Irvine, you have him write a column, he's the muscular chef, you do this. And all that stuff went unnoticed. And then literally on day one, when I started at Muscle and Fitness, they were like, we want you to edit this guy. And I was like, oh my God. And they're like, you know who he is? I'm like, I'm like, I've been screaming from the rooftops that someone needs to do this. So yeah, it was a really weird serendipitous thing. I don't know. You talk about law of attraction and all kind of stuff, but my goodness, I mean, what a bizarre moment that was.
And then, so he approaches you, we need to do this kind of a book, and you're just like, yes. I mean, what was the, were you?
No. Yeah. So I had, once I developed a rapport with him, I said, you know, I'd like to write a story about you and pitch it to, like, you know, the Daily News. Really want to talk about, you know, everything, how you got your start and why it is that you want to help these failing restaurateurs, you know, fix their businesses. And I never wrote that piece because I just started, we had such a conversation out of it. Now I was in like a business partnership by the end of it. He was just like, listen, you're coming with me. This is what we're going to do. You're going to do a book. And I was like, oh, that sounds like a better idea than pitching the one article. So sure.
Very cool. So I was reading in your bio that one of the things that you kind of at your core is to make sure that you write stories that excite you and that the readers would actually want to read. And I would assume that you do the same with the content that you create for Chef Irvine.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many things to be said for, you know, chasing what excites you and that's what's going to get the best out of you. And I would just say, I'm simply not good enough to do it when my heart is not in it. I can't just kind of, you know, there are times, yes, when you have to kind of just muscle through with what you have, but that's never anything that I'd want to save or show to people. Or it's always the stuff that you're on fire to do that you would say, hey, look at this. It's never the things that you you know, just kind of had to force your way through. So yeah, Muscle and Fitness was a great way for me to do that because every story you're writing about all the things I love. It wasn't just strength and conditioning. It was the marriage of that with, you know, the comic book movies. You know, you do cover stories on Henry Cavill and Dwayne Johnson and football players, Drew Brees, Michael Strahan. And so it's sports, it's entertainment, it's all the stuff I love, and finding the stories in there. And there's a kind of a format to do it, right? There's like this is how he got in shape for the movie, and that's what people want to know. But I took great pride in finding, like, you know, a more meaningful story in there. One of the stories that's up on my website is that Henry Cavill story, that we did for Man of Steel. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like he needs to get in shape and look this way to look good in the suit. He needed to mentally become the guy. Yeah. And his trainer gave him this training regimen that was so difficult that he would have a look in his eyes when he was done with it. And that look in his eyes would be, I can do anything. And that's what Superman needs to look like. Yeah. It needs to be in his eyes, actually. And so like, you know, digging a little deeper, you're not able to dig deeper if you don't really care about it. And I really cared about all that stuff. So I've been lucky in that way that there's not too much anymore that I have to do that's not you know, up my alley. I get to call my shots.
Well, that's what I love about what you've created, because it really is something that, like, if you were, you know, a 10-year-old kid and you said, create what your vision of your future career looks like, I'm sure this was not it. It didn't exist. Like, and exactly. That's what I just respect so much, is you stood really, I mean, a lot of divine intervention too, but you saw the opportunities and ran with them And it seems like I've watched your career through the years, and you always kind of really stay true to who you are and how you want to spend your time, where you want to do your work, who you want to do it with. It's really impressive.
Yeah, there was a great piece of advice I heard, which was calculate less. And when you just hear those two words together, they make so much sense, because you can spend all this time calculating, like, I want to get there. And if I meet this person, and then I talk to that person, and then I do this, and then I do that. And if they like the way I do this, then maybe blah, blah, blah. When you're going a million miles an hour and you're doing the stuff that really excites you, that stuff just happens.
Yeah.
It's a byproduct of the effort and the passion and everything else. Because look at me, I was sitting there trying to calculate, how do I get Robert Irvine in this magazine? How do I do that? How do I do that? And then once I finally gave up on that and forgot about it and just went a million miles, then it just happened. Like, you know, you can't make that stuff up.
No.
So yeah, that's what it is. It's calculate less. Just keep doing what you really love.
So since leaving Muscle and Fitness, now you've done, I mean, quite a bit with him. You've created magazines, you've written three books, yeah. Is it?
Yeah, it's the third book. We started a digital magazine. It's robertirvinemagazine.com.
Fantastic. Go check it out.
One man band with that. I design it, I write it, I edit it.
It's beautiful. 90-odd percent. So well done.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. That means a lot. It hasn't been that easy to do, but we've been, the people that read it, you know, Robert's core fans, we pump it out to his, you know, he's got a couple million followers on Facebook, and they appreciate it. And within that, you know, we have the stuff that the fans expect. You know, they want the recipes, they want the workouts, they want stories about behind the scenes stuff, Restaurant Impossible. And within that, I'm still able to bring in, you know, all the stuff that I love, talk to the athletes, talk to the actors, and have conversations like this. I love doing what you do, and getting people's stories and figuring out what makes them tick, asking them how they get unstuck, and finding the service in there for the reader, figuring out, like, it's not just the story, but what's in your story that people can use. One of the questions I always ask every person I interview is, how do you get unstuck? And there have been a lot of different answers that I've liked, but I think the one that has come up a few times in worded in different ways is just kind of take any step.
Yeah.
Just take any step. And that's something I have to remember too. Like when I have, you know, have these three or four big articles to write, or I have, you know, this chapter of the book that's waiting for my attention, and you wake up and you finally get, you know, away from the screaming kids, and now you sit down, it's just like, now I have to be on because I only have this much time. And that's really daunting. So, you know, start with your emails. And now I'm writing, at least I'm writing something.
Right.
Now you reply in a thoughtful way to a few people, all of a sudden those parts of your brain that like to do that, it's like, okay, remember this? You remember writing? This feels good, right? Okay. Now you open up that big document and that doesn't seem so bad now. So it's just take any step. You know, you going to the gym for an hour, whatever feels terrible. I don't have the time today. I don't have the energy. Fine. Convince yourself to go for 5 minutes.
Right.
Once you do your 5 minutes, now it's, you know, come on, you're not going to leave after 5 minutes. You might, but you probably won't.
No, definitely not. I was arguing with myself the other day because I've been trying to do at least 2 miles every day. And I was like giving myself every excuse in the book. And I finally just said, you know what? Argue with yourself on the road, get your feet out the door, and you can have all of these conversations while you're getting the walk done. So
exactly. That's like the most frustrating thing, having been through it so many times, is the, you know, all the internal negotiations took
sure.
you 10 times longer than it would have to just do the damn thing.
Yeah. Well, and then I recognize it with, you know, my creative life too. The minute I start procrastinating or giving myself excuses or whatever it may be, I know that I just have to shut that down. I recognize it at least now as, you know, one of the things that I do to kind of put work off, or if there, like you said, if there's a project I really don't want to get into, because I know it's going to be super time intensive, I just have to jump in. I do use a lot of different tools. I call it a creative toolbox. So, you know, sometimes it's a movement thing. I'll do like insane dancing to my favorite songs. Sometimes it's just setting a area, you know, I have my candles here and my incense and like that, hitting all the senses, whatever, wherever I'm at that day can really help me kind of get in the zone and get focused. Cause I struggle with the ADHD and it's hard to kind of get yourself there. But sometimes these things kind of help me zone in.
The sensory thing is, you know, that's so important because, you know, you and I both will sit and work at a computer, and that's, you know, that's how many people now in the world that are, and, you know, you think that just, you know, bearing down and staying in this chair is going to help. It's not. You need that crazy dancing or the candle, or just, you know, you need to remind yourself that you're an animal sometimes, you know, and you need to move that blood flow creates the workflow.
Oh, it's huge. And I think just, it makes me, I mean, for me personally, the walking in the morning just makes me feel so grateful to be like human and alive and on this earth, because just the magical things that I encounter every single morning blow my mind. Like this morning, there was a great blue heron and I was like, oh, and it was huge and had this incredible wingspan. And I was like, that's my gift today. Thank you so much. Or I saw a turtle the other day, or when I was out in Montauk, I saw whales breaching. I was like, what is going on? But
all the fuel is outside the office.
Definitely. So what is your creative process like? I mean, is it, you know, on your best day, is it being physical, whether it's a gym visit or some sort of other, like, how do you get yourself there?
Yeah. I mean, in the past it would have been, you know, lifting weights and now it's more like riding a bike, but I love that probably even more now at this point in my life. You know, whizzing past the trees, it just feels fun. Like it feels like, you know, I feel like a kid again. And one of the things that like your last guest was talking about was the, you know, the permission to play as an adult. And that is so awesome. And we don't grant ourselves that permission because there's always another responsibility that needs to be taken care of. There's always that other thing. And, but as you know, if you work in a creative field, that play becomes a necessity. Definitely. Because if it's just, you cannot call upon the creative faculties when you have dedicated 100% of your whole life force to just, you know, knocking down this responsibility, this thing, this, you know, just crossing off to-do lists and doing for other people. And, you know, I need to read. I need to read for pleasure and not news. I need to pick up a book. I need to play a video game, you know, run and listen to music, whatever it is. You know, I need the unstructured time is where, you know, things really open up.
I know.
And yeah.
It almost feels not wasteful, but in a way, like I have to make an excuse for it. Like, oh, I have to do this. But meanwhile, like just like you said, that guest before talking about that permission, it's so necessary, especially in a creative field, to open up that side of your brain.
Well, you're Catholic, right? You grew up Catholic?
I grew up Catholic, yeah.
Yes, that's exactly how I say it these days. But yeah, that's ingrained in us that, you know, Kendra, what are you doing? You have these children that depend on you, and you have this, and you're going to what? You need to dance now? Oh, you know, and there's that nagging voice in your head like, oh, look who's special. You know, that is a thing to overcome. And I know it's not just Catholics. There's so many different, you know, ethnicities and religions that ingrain this, this guilt. You know, it's this, you know, do you think you're so special? What about everyone who needs all these things from you? What do you think you're doing? And it takes a lot to get past that, but the good stuff can't really come until you do.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of faith in the ability that you have to both create time for yourself and what you need, and then also getting the things that you need to get done. And I think one of the things I've recently, because I never, if you asked me last year, can you set aside, you know, an hour and a half a day to take time for yourself, whatever that looks like, I would have said, absolutely not. There is no space for that. You just have to make the space for these types of things. And that's what I've been doing lately. And shockingly, everything still gets done, probably even way better and more efficiently than it did before.
Yeah. 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 100%. And then all your experience leads you to a point where you know how much you need. You know what's the little hit of that fun that, that is going to be just enough to set you off. And now you can go on your way and you can do your thing.
Yeah.
I was something I was thinking about when I was thinking about talking to you, just to segue from that that experience. Sorry, I'm getting that, send that to voicemail. Sorry about that.
Okay.
I was thinking that just all my experience has led me to a point where I have just, it's all about shrinking the amount of time that I need to look at my work in a cold, calculating way, as if I were someone else. Because when I think back to the early part of my career, where when I was in college writing something, you know, woe be unto the editor who dare to change a word of my masterpiece. My gosh, this is, you know, you're totally married to it, and it's so important. And then I remember picking up a piece like months later, and I was like, oh my God, this sucks. This is a bad article. And I went to war over not changing like any part of it. And that is a really humbling thing. It's embarrassing. It feels really crappy, because you know what you put people through to fight for your quote unquote vision. And then, you know, I go off to a daily paper where it's not, you're putting out something occasionally, you're publishing every single day, maybe more than once. And now all of a sudden the thing is gone as soon as you're done with it and you have no more attachment to it. And come what may, it belongs to the world now. And that amount of time that I need to be able to look at it cold has gone from that, like, oh, I need months between having written something and looking back and being cold with it, is now, you know, it's just like the very next day. Open it up. Nope. Crap. That needs to come out. Okay. That's not bad. Good job yesterday, Matt. That's, we'll allow it. That's fine. But no, you didn't work through this idea that well. That needs to change. But, I think for creative people, I think, well, there's a book I'd like to recommend, The Creative Act by Rick Rubin. Came out earlier this year. He's
Love.
A super
I was
producer.
Just going to tell you that offline, that like, I okay. have it. You have to read it. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's so great. It's so great.
I read
it's
it like so the great. Bible. I just open it up and I'm like, okay, that's what I need to hear today. Thank you.
That is the thing. You can read it cover to cover or just use it as an oracle and pick out, you know, just flop it open to a random page and pick a sentence, because it's so
it's spiritual and everything
yes.
is connected. And oh, I love it.
It's so tight. It's so tightly written. There's nothing wasted. But the thing that keeps echoing through my head from that book was just that you just need to put stuff out. You need to get in the habit of putting stuff out. You need to get in the habit of letting the stuff go. Because the next and better thing can only come once you let go of this thing. And, you know, and he has so many stories about artists who are just like, you know, this is my magnum opus and it needs to be perfect and it needs to be perfect. And it's just like, no, it needs to go out. And that's not from a business perspective. It's from the spiritual sense. You need to let it go now. And then because the next thing will not come in until you have let go of this one. And that was a powerful passage, because I think, again, as a young person starting this stuff, you think about, like, you know, if I just, you know, you want that perfect thing. You want to have that thing that, like, this is the piece that defines me, and nothing but bad shit can come from that.
And you need that time, right? Like, you need to go through that in order to recognize it, first of all, and get quicker. Because you really do need to get quicker. You need to release the preciousness of what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, and every piece leads to the next one, which is you're going to make even better and take the lessons learned with you from that.
Yes, because you can look at the... any emphasis on speed, I think artists will look at as, like, that is a concern of the capitalist world. That is a, you know, that is a problem for commerce. That's not a problem for my art. This is important. But the speed imbues any work with a sense of urgency, because you can, there's a, something that is written with urgency. I know this for myself. Like, I remember I was fired up. I wrote this with urgency, and you can't help but read it with urgency. And the thing that I wasn't sure about, and the thing that I wanted to massage into this perfect thing, it's just like, you know, it doesn't have that. It doesn't have that energy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's true. There is an energy that happens when you create something with that mindset. And there's an excitement and a passion that I think if you're harping on specific little points of something, you kind of lose that.
100%.
I can't imagine how many times like painters have painted over and over and over and over. And meanwhile, like the underpainting is probably the best thing on there.
Of course. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. 100%. You know, you can overproduce music. You can, paint too many visual effects into a movie. You can rewrite, you can over design, and all that stuff comes from ego, really. That inability to let it go, the desire to make it perfect and have it, you know, define you in some way. That's all unhealthy stuff. And I think sounds like we both have gotten past that most of that amateurishness.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and I think there's a certain level of imposter syndrome there too, especially like for me, I'm kind of taking a step in a different direction and I feel that all over again. Like, I don't feel that over here, but in this space, because it's new for me, I'm like, oh, come on. Like, I know this stuff. I learned these lessons.
I know it. Yeah. Cause that same Catholic voice will peek up, you know, and say, you know, what are you doing here?
Right. Who are you to do this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on. But yeah, I don't know if you saw my website, but I have I've written a few screenplays, a few television pilots and things like that in the past couple of years. And I have gotten some industry fans, like a former Simpsons showrunner, a writer from Futurama, a feature writer who didn't even ask to read it, had found it from someone else and gave me a call. You know, I have this crazy imposter syndrome because, you know, A, you're out on Long Island. What do you think you're doing with that?
Right.
B, you're a journalist. What are you doing? Come on. Like, it's like almost embarrassing just to buy the damn screenwriting software. It's like, ugh. And then once you get past that, and you just have fun and you just do it, you know, the chances of anything ever happening with that are so slim, but I had so much fun doing it. And the call I got from the feature writer a few months ago has been, whatever happens, I'll carry this one to my grave. He just said, listen, there is something that happens. And this is a guy who has made movies. And he said, there is something that happens when you're reading something and you know you are in good hands. He's like, and I still can't define it after this many, you know, 30 years out here. But you have that. I knew within two pages that I was in good hands and that I could finish this. And I loved it.
Aww.
He said, now I don't know if I can help you, but I want to try. And here's the thing. I think if you have the goods, you're not allowed to quit, and you have the goods. And I said, okay, that'll carry me for the next year. Thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate
that. That's amazing.
So,
And you just did it because for the fun of doing it.
Yeah, I mean, I really, you know, I had had a couple failed attempts to turn this idea into a novel. And the more I thought about it, the way it was episodic and it didn't lead to like a single point, I was like, this is really a show. And I guess I should just try to write it as a show. It wanted to be a TV show. So I wrote it that way. And I've got some fans. So that's nice. You know, doing a thing well and getting it made in that world, it's like the difference between, you know, it's like trying to get a bill through Congress.
Sure.
But so.
Well, that's an interesting point too, though. Like your vision of the end result of something, allowing it to kind of change as you develop it and not being so set on the outcome of what something looks like, I think is really, really important.
Yeah. Yeah. I have just always felt like, you know, a big important story, a story that means so much to your life, that's your book, that's your novel, that's going
right,
to be
right.
your thing, and it has to be that way. And it was just like, it just doesn't feel that way. It doesn't feel like a novel. And I don't know if I've written some books, I don't know if I can do a novel. That's a whole different skill set. But I figured out how to write a screenplay, so that feels good. I'm still working on some other stuff.
Yeah, so what's next?
There was something I wrote a spec episode of Family Guy, which you're told nowadays, like, that used to be the way you got staffed on a television show, was that you'd write an episode of a different show, so people say, oh, you can imitate this voice really well, okay, great, you can slot in. That's not what they do anymore. They really just want to see pilots. So I just wrote a couple of pilots. But for these different fellowships, like the Warner Brothers one, they still want to see spec episodes. Mm-hmm. So I applied to the Warner Brothers fellowship. And as soon as I had my idea, I said, oh my God, there's no way they'll like this at all. But I was having so much fun doing it. So I just wrote it. And I submitted it to this industry list called the Stunt List. It's like they put it out every year. It's the best unproduced spec episodes of television, and there are like 40 scripts on it. There are, and just about, I think, like 37 of the writers are all work in Hollywood, and I'm like one of the three that doesn't. So I made this year's list, but they won't publicize it or push it out because it was set to go out like in the middle of May, and the writers went on strike like May 1st.
Yeah.
So it just, as an act of solidarity, to not promote any screenplays at all, that's all on the back burner until it gets resolved. But
well,
yeah, there's that.
Gets resolved, yeah. And everybody gets what they deserve, and you know, it can move on in a really positive way.
Yeah. Well, it's existential. Like they literally cannot go back to work under the conditions that, like, we might replace you with AI. We
right.
might just have AI write something, and then we'll just ask you to fix it. The AI will come up with the story ideas. Meanwhile, the AI doesn't have anything except what it's been fed, which is all copyrighted material that these people came up with. It's an inflection point, and I just know that, like, they can't afford to half save themselves and buy themselves a few more years of work. They need to make sure that they're shored up long term. So it could be a while.
I've been watching the coverage through the eyes of Adam Conover. I don't know if you're familiar with who he is, but he went to Shoreham. I've always kind of followed his career. He did the Adam Ruins Everything, but he has explained it so eloquently and really. I didn't realize the way writing happened in Hollywood. Now I was like, oh my gosh, this is insane. How do you have a family? How do you pay a mortgage? So yeah, I'm hoping that it goes the right way and everybody comes out winners. On the
yeah,
other side
and it's a strong union. I think they'll get the job done.
Very good. So you know, anybody listening to this, if there's one thing that they walk away with from this episode, what would you want that to be?
I would have to say then, you know, just find your North Star. I think your gut knows better than your conscious mind so many times in your life when you think about different people you met and the gut feeling you had about them versus what your logical mind was telling you about how maybe they could help you or they were a good person to know, that could get you somewhere else. Your gut usually has the right of it. And if you can have the courage to just listen to it and understand that, no doesn't necessarily mean no. It might just mean, not now. Then I think you'll be fine with whatever it is you're trying to do. Because when I think back about how many times I have been just maddeningly frustrated trying to get, into magazines and then trying to get to the next step and all that calculating I did, if I had just kind of sat back and followed my gut, I would have saved myself a lot of stress and had a lot more fun.
Love it. Totally agree.
So.
Well, thank you so, Matt. Thank you so much, Matt.
Yeah.
I'm going to
thank
put
you,
all your
Kendra.
Links. I'm going to put all your links in the show notes so everyone can find you. What's your favorite social channel?
I'm on what was always called Twitter, and now it's called X. I'm there until he burns it down to the ground completely. I can't help myself, but I do think you need to level with your audience and give the full disclosure here about how we know each other.
Yeah.
I think that's important because, guys, I met Kendra and my wife in the same evening. I met my wife at Kendra's Halloween party. I went as Mike Piazza and she was Snow White. And I really didn't want to go. I was very tired from the day at work and I was just harassed into it by my friends. And you could take this as inspiration or a warning, but when I saw this girl, I saw this girl across the barn where we were.
Yeah, it was a big barn party.
I just said, I had no hope of it. I had no hope. I identified her as that as a girl who was out of my league, and I have no business talking to her. But I absolutely refuse to watch one of my friends talk to her all night. That is going to hurt. And I was like, I've seen this movie before. I'm not doing this. I'm not going to let whoever it is, go over there and talk to her all night. And I'm just going to be sitting there scowling. So I just went up to her and I said, hi, I'm Matt. Nice to meet you. And now we're married. So like I said, inspiration or warning about being bold. The first time I was ever that forward and I wound up married. So
I
there
mean,
you go.
Talk about divine intervention, right?
Right. Didn't want to go, was forced. So
yeah. Well, listen to your gut.
Oh, thank you, Kendra, for
the
podcast
much.
And the wife.
Anytime. I just wanted to thank Matt Tuttle for coming on the show. It was such a great conversation. I had so much fun talking to you. You're one of my favorite people and such a huge inspiration. That's the reason I wanted you to come on and tell your story. Every guest that we bring on is meant to inspire you, all of you listeners who are thinking about the way you want your career to look. It doesn't have to follow a specific roadmap. You can kind of create your own. Know who you are. Know how you want to feel, and then build a career that aligns with that. It's not easy. You have to do the work. Sometimes it's tumultuous, but it's so worth it when you can wake up every single day and absolutely love and be inspired by what you do. If you want to connect with Matt Tuttle, you can find him on social media. I am going to put all his links in the show notes and review us. Come find us. Let me know what you thought of this episode. I'm on Instagram. I would love to hear. DM me. Let me know, how did Matt inspire you? Thanks so much for listening, guys. I hope you have a great week. I will see you next week with a fresh episode.